The philosopher Plotinus is certainly important in his own right, but from the perspective of Christian theology and the development of mystical theology important, he is also very important, not only because he is a contemporary of Origen and studied under the same sources, the same philosophers who taught Origen, but also because his own writings, which were gathered together, and one must use the term writings loosely, because Plotinus himself never wrote anything. It was his biographer and disciple Porphyry who gathered together his sayings into the texts now known as the Enneads. Plotinus's texts powerfully influenced the later Christian theological tradition, primarily through the writings of Dionysius the Areopagite and others who would have read and known his texts. Plotinus is above all a pagan. Although he lives in a world that is aware of the existence of Christianity, he is not interested in Christianity at all. He doesn't condescend to insult Christianity, but his biographer and his disciple Porphyry certainly does. So there is a tradition of anti-Christian polemic that is linked to Plotinus' writings, not because of what you find in the texts themselves, but because of the secondary writings of Plotinus' editor, Porphyry. Plotinus himself is the exponent of a development of Platonic thought, which takes much more seriously and tries to systematize the otherwise rather disparate and in some cases seemingly contradictory elements concerning metaphysics that one finds in Plato. For Plotinus, in a sense, God is the one. The great unity can be identified with that God of which all other deities are, in some sense, the local appearances, or in some cases, the just imaginative symbols. He believes in what one might call a kind of celestial trinity. He emphasizes the hierarchy of the highest being, first of all, the one or the good being the first principle, secondary, the divine mind or nous, which represents the noetic world or the world of ideas, and then the soul or psuche, all of which are interrelated but hierarchically ordered under one another as a kind of a level certainly above the level of the created. However, for Plotinus, there is no necessity for what the Christian tradition will call theosis or divinization, because Plotinus believed that the deepest level of the human self is the nous, which is already divine. One does not require divinization because there is already a divine and eternal part of the self that needs to be liberated, to encourage, to contemplate, to look up, to behold the One, to enter insofar as it's possible into union with it, so that at the end of earthly life, at the end of leaving this body of matter, one will be able to move that much closer towards relationship with divinity. Let's look at the Platonic texts that we've selected here, beginning with the selection from the Enneads from Book 1, Numbers 6 and 8 to 9. He says, "How are we to gain the open sea?" He uses the metaphor of Odysseus to describe the philosopher's desire to reach out, to flee from the earthly mode of existence to the celestial. The fatherland, he says, is that place from which we have come. There has been a descent of the divine part of the self into the material world. He doesn't describe exactly how this has happened, but we contain within ourselves something of a memory, something of a hint of that, and he says, you must close your eyes, call instead upon another vision to be awakened within you, the birthright of all, and use this inner vision. He goes on to say, the soul must be trained, first of all, through the virtues, then through beholding, through contemplating that which is good and that which is beautiful. And then he recommends a whole series of what we would call spiritual exercises, contemplative practices. He says, withdraw into yourself and look. And if you are not yet beautiful, act as does the creator of a statue. You need to smooth here, cut away that which is excessive. In other words, work on yourself by means of perfecting the vision, the virtues. Never cease chiseling until there shall shine out from you the godlike splendor of virtue. Then, when you have become this perfect work, when you are self-gathered into the purity of your being, and if you drop down to the end of this first selection, he says, now you call upon all your confidence, you need a guide no longer, strain and see. There is a contemplative looking beyond the world that is a kind of rapture, a being seized by or being able to step beyond the world and apprehend and even to be united in some sense to the One. Now, one needs to add that although for Plotinus and for his tradition, one can in some sense love the One, love this distant deity, there is no way in which one can say that the One loves humankind. The work of union with the divine is a work which each individual must accomplish themselves. There is no theology of grace. The One is not providing you with some sort of metaphysical assistance in doing this. You are aspiring to be like the One. You may love the One, but you cannot attribute that kind of motivation to God or the One in God's self. If we drop down to the next section that I've labeled ecstatic vision, he says, many times it has happened, lifted out of the body, he's describing his own experience, to become external to all other things, acquiring identity with the divine. One is identified with realizing the divine within the self. It's not that you're becoming divine, not that the One is making you or divinizing you more like God's self. You are already divine and discovering what is within you, according to Plotinus. Then if we drop down to the section that, section 6, 734, chapter 34, there is a longing within us, a pathos, which is utterly free from shape. One has to divest oneself of all intellectual concepts. And then he says, so that alone it may receive the alone. You make yourself apt and beautiful to be brought into likeness with the divine. This idea of moné, monon, of the solitary or the alone into the alone, is his notion of how this contemplative ascent works. There is no community in Plotinus. There is no sense that you are helping others to achieve this, except insofar as they might emulate your philosophical example. Your prayers do not assist others, and certainly the divine is not assisting you. One goes alone to the alone. It's a very solitary mode of ascent, and again, utterly different from the Christian notion that presupposes the existence of a community moving together towards God and assisting one another through prayer. If one then moves down to the section that has this large gold bar marked not theosis, for the soul is divine, that's particularly emphasized in the texts that follow. He says, there is our veritable love, our true love. Any that have seen know what I have in mind. The soul takes another life as it approaches God. Restored, thus it feels that the dispenser of true life is there to see. And then dropping down, raised to Godhead, or better, knowing its godhood. I should say, raised to godhood. This soul realizes that it is divine. Not that it has been made so, but that it already is that, and it is coming to realize the truth of its own existence. He uses the term, and there's a blue bar marked in Hezukiah, from the alone to the alone. He uses the term quiet, inward stillness. This is a term that will be used in the later Byzantine tradition, particularly in association with the Jesus prayer, the idea of inward stillness or quiet. Plotinus uses the word Hezukiah to describe a stillness that enables it to, as he puts it, attain isolation. And in the experience of this vision that is acquired in this quiet, this moving of the alone to the alone, he says, the beholder is one with the beheld. That which we see is identified with us. It's as if the soul is identifying itself with, becoming more truly what it already is, the divine. And then finally, dropping down a little further to the highlighted texts, when the soul begins again to mount or to rise, it comes not to something alien, but to itself. The soul is, the divine soul, the divine innermost self, is rising up to discover that divine reality above it. And then the very last section, he says, this is the life of gods and of the godlike and blessed among men, liberation from the alien that besets us here. There is no theology of the goodness of matter in Plotinus. The material world is to be escaped, is to be gotten away from, and finally, a life taking no pleasure in the things of the earth is a flight of the alone to the alone. There is much here that will be popular with and fascinating for and even appropriated by the later Christian theological tradition, but it's obvious also that there are things here that are incompatible with the tradition that regards God as the creator and sanctifier of the universe, and certainly there is an approach here that is incompatible with the notion of divine incarnation.